Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A man, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you brought your A game. A man, no rain.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined, as always, by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Oh, not bad, man. Spring break starts at school this week. This afternoon, I officially filled out my paperwork and registration. I'm going to wrestle 1 month from tomorrow. So,
and are we going to get video of this match? I want to see this.
It's more than that. It's a tournament. I think it's going to be streamed. So,
okay.
I think it will be a thing on, I think it's going to be on Flow Wrestling. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it is. Ew. So,
where's the tournament and what weight class?
The Expo in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And 100 kilos. So 220 pounds.
Okay. Good deal. Good deal. And then this is what, like in a over 45 bracket?
It's, I believe the years are 1975 to 1982.
Okay.
So it's like 50 to 42-ish.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'll be 42 next month, and I was born in 83. So,
yeah. So 43. Yeah. So yeah. I'm 45. Okay. Yeah. Math. Do the math. So yeah. Jesus. So yeah, it's going to see what happens. Been training with some college kids the last few weeks. Feel pretty good.
And you're smoking those little shits, right? Like you're not letting us down. Like you're crushing these kids, right?
I'm competing. They're smaller than me, but they're college kids. Like they're, my shape, they're really like, they're like, you can run and I'm doing a lot of Tabata and like, you know, plyometric type stuff to get in shape. Cause knees don't really handle running when you get to this age, but my shape is good until you wrestle. And then it's a different level of shape, but I feel really good. I got a kid who, two of my former athletes have been coming home and working with me, and, they both say my gut wrench feels really good. So we'll see. Not for them, but for me, it feels really good. For them, it was absolute misery. So we'll see how that plays out. My shape is getting better going in tomorrow. I've been going in at 6 a.m. to get morning workouts in a couple times a week.
That's
so just getting in there with some college boys, and I feel good, man. We'll see what happens. I might go out there and get my shit stomped, or I'll go out there and win, and who knows, man. I'm just going to show that I can stand one more time.
Right. Well, and you like to challenge yourself and like to, you know. You know, and you've been around the mat like since you were like a baby almost, and it's probably been a while since you've.
I was
still late. Okay,
I started in eighth grade, and I didn't have I didn't start my official first match until spring going into freshman year. So I was always way behind the curve, as far as that goes. Like, so I didn't really even figure my high school wasn't very good, so I didn't even really figure out how to wrestle till like my second year of college. Yeah. You know, and I was, but I've been with her ever since, and I know I'm. What I wasn't as an athlete, I am as a coach, as far as like knowledge and skill and stuff like that. And like, I've really kind of fallen in love with Greco-Roman wrestling, and it's what I really should have done with my skill set. So, you know, I'm going to give this a shot. We'll see what happens.
Well, good deal. Well, we're looking forward to checking that out. So it was a big weekend in amateur wrestling, NCAA. So Gable Steveson didn't work out in the WWE, didn't work out in the NFL. So he went back to college, which I still don't think I quite understand how that even works. But, and I'm sure you have the rundown, probably like the Cliff Notes version, but he went back to college and he got all the way to the NCAA championships and he lost. Like, this is his first loss in his like entire college career, right?
No, no, that's not true. Okay. No, he lost a couple times as a freshman. Okay. It was when Gable was a freshman, he was a little chunky and was a little cocky, and he lost to the kid from Penn State, whose name is escaping me at the moment, who's a pretty good heavyweight. And then he went on his run. Like, so what's going on right now? This is a weird, it's been a weird few years with COVID. Everyone got an extra year of eligibility.
Oh, okay.
So we got a whole bunch of sixth and seventh year seniors. I remember there's a guy from North Carolina who won NCAAs last year who was in law school, legitimately in law school. We got dudes in medical school that are doing it. So this is the last year of it. Gable Dan is the big story, but Carter Starace from Penn State became the first five-time NCAA champion. You know, and that's the only time that's ever going to happen. He's really good. He beat a guy going for his third. So, I mean, like, it's pretty crazy. Last night, we had a lot of guys get upset. We had two guys from Illinois, won national titles, Vincent Robinson, Dean Hamidi, my dude. Really proud of them. Kid Lucas Bird from the University of Illinois. We claim him, even though he's from Ohio. Won a national title. So, it was a good day. Eight All-Americans from Illinois. I was very proud to have been Matt's side for a lot of them coming up through high school. So that's, you know, brought a little tear to my eye. But the main event is Gable Steveson. So Gable had an extra year. He should not have been able to do this. Like, this is something brand new. I can't believe they let this fly. But my thought is that he had the year because he never finished his college career. So he had the extra year and they allowed him to come back. And he came back at the semester and he looked untouchable. But the dude who everyone thought was going to win it was Wyatt, who thought before Gable came back, the guy everyone thought was going to win it was Wyatt Hendrickson, who wrestled for Air Force.
And yeah, he's a second lieutenant in the Air Force. So he's one of my guys. So
and he was legit. I remember he beat my guy, Tony Cassiope, in like the quarterfinal wrestlebacks 2 years ago. It's the first time I ever really paid attention to Hendricks because he's a big son of a bitch. And I'm like, this big kid, and he's really good. I'm like, this kid's good. And then, because of NIL and stuff like that, and because the Air Force Academy doesn't allow redshirting, they allowed him to leave, and he will not start his tour until he's finished with his wrestling career. So they're going to let him train up to 2028. Very similar to David Robinson in the Naval Academy in the 80s.
Yeah, well, the NBA, yeah.
Very similar to that. So they're letting Wyatt. So Wyatt got a deal from, because of NIL money, Wyatt got a deal from Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State is in a rebirth year. They hired David Taylor, who was Kale Sanderson's protege at Penn State. Like he was one of the first big name guys that Kale had at Penn State. They gave him a boatload of money to take over Oklahoma State, which is the most Iowa gets a lot of the attention, but on paper, Oklahoma State is the most storied wrestling program in history. So David Taylor comes to Oklahoma State. One of the first thing he thinks he does is he brings Wyatt Hendrickson in with a big old NIL deal. So this has been the match people have been hoping to see for a long time. But Gable, not only was Gable a two-time NCAA champion, but Gable was also an Olympic gold medalist who at the height of his career was done. And he won the Olympic, we talked about on the show, he won the Olympic team trials last year. And WWE, because they're buttholes, would not let him compete in the world, in the Olympic Games. Would not let him clean. He won the spot. It was going to be his. Didn't get it. Helped led to a really kind of a piss poor performance that the U.S. had this past year. But then he came back to college and he's just schooling dudes. Schooling dudes. These are good. Like, heavyweights right now are good too. So everybody expected it to be kind of a fun match, but nobody thought that Wyatt Hendrickson was going to beat him. Gable gets the first takedown, and then Wyatt shows some really good scrambling in this match. Like, for a heavyweight, for a big man, man, this kid could freaking scramble. And then at the closing set, Gable's winning 4-2. Closing seconds, Wyatt takes a shot on a high crotch. Gable kind of chest locks him and doesn't square up his back hip, kind of keeps it flared out. And then he does what we teach the kids do, is you knee under, pound in, you get those hips underneath. And with 6 seconds left, he finishes, not probably more like eight or 10 seconds left, he finishes that high crotch on Gable Steveson. And that's it. We have the massive upset. I mean, it's one of the biggest upsets in NCAA wrestling history. It's right up there with Dan Gable, who Gable Dan was named after, which they like to point that out. So like, I joked with some of my friends, like his dad fucked him at birth by cursing him with that name. It's one of the biggest. Steve Gable won his gold medal after that. You know, Gable Steveson won his gold medal before. So to have an Olympic gold medalist go down, especially one that was so dominant, like Gable in the games in 21 was just unbelievable. He was beating these legit dudes left and right and just beating them with a stamp. He's still, in my opinion, the greatest heavyweight of all time. Like just the way he wrestles, you know, with it, considering he really hadn't done much before coming back to be able to just do that. And he lost. He just got beat. You know, like he just kind of got beat. I truly believe if he had a full season underneath him and never did the WWE or Bill's thing, this wouldn't have been close. But, you know, shoulda, woulda, coulda. Wyatt Henriksen is now the guy, and he's probably our best bet to make the team in 2028, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, he looked amazing. Dude, that crowd went insane. And then, of course, Daniel Cormier, who was Oklahoma State wrestler himself. Yes, it was Oklahoma State, right? Mm-hmm. He was on commentary. Like He was not afraid to be biased in that moment. It just was going apeshit. Well, because it was just this huge moment, right? It was insane.
Oh, it was massive. And then he was the same way when Dean Hamidi won it for the Cowboys at 165. You know, he's a little, or 174, excuse me, a little home cooking in there, you know, but then the other guy is Jordan Burroughs, you know, one of the greatest U.S. wrestlers of all time, who was a Nebraska guy. Nebraska took second. So he had, you know, it was kind of cool how that worked out with those two guys in commentary, and they're really good together. So it was fun listening to it. You know, I like seeing greatness. So I didn't really love seeing Gable lose, right? But Gable always plays himself as the heel. He was being a complete dickhead before the match, staring him down WWE or more UFC style.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what happens to Gable here. Like, is this something that makes him go, you know what, fuck this, I'm going to go win another gold medal? Or does he go, you know, maybe MMA? Like, he's been...
I think UFC would be, like, the way to go for him, for real. You know, WWE just wasn't right for him, and like, and they cut him and his brother. I could see him, you know, going the way of UFC. He's been training some UFC fighters, like on the mat and stuff. It's like training with some guys. So I think that's the way for him. He could take the same route that Daniel Cormier went. Daniel Cormier is one of the greatest MMA heavyweights of all time. Mm-hmm. He really is. He's fantastic. Well, and I think that's his path in my book.
It's funny because Daniel actually DC. Wrestled 184 pounds in college. And he actually lost to Kale Sanderson, the coach from Penn State, the greatest American wrestler ever. Like, man, was four-time undefeated NCAA champion. Kale was amazing. So it's interesting because Gable's got a similar body to DC. Like, I remember we had a talk with our buddy Garrett when I talked to Garrett, maybe it was with Justin. When Gable first signed, I had my reservations. So I didn't see it for him in WWE. And I called that back in 2021 when it happened. And I'm like, I don't know if it's going to work. And like, kind of here we are. And there's a lot more money in amateur wrestling than there ever has been. Like, there's dudes with these NIL deals that are making a lot of money, man. There's high school kids that are getting lots and lots of money. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how necessarily easily like Gable's skills will translate to MMA, because a lot of times the best wrestlers don't necessarily make the best fighters. A lot of times the guys who were really good fighters were guys that were pretty good wrestlers, you know, pretty good division one wrestlers, you know,
like,
not
like John Jones is the example. He's a great, great fighter. Probably the greatest that ever lived, but he was like, just like an okay. He was like a JUCO, like wrestling, JUCO wrestling. Matt Riddle ended up beating him. You know, he had a decent like background in it, but his skill set just translated to MMA more because of his body type. And like, he just really got the striking down pretty quick.
Rashad Evans is another guy. He was an All-American, but I think Rashad took like seventh or eighth was the best he ever did. Like, it's good. You're an All-American. You're freaking good. But I mean, like, a lot of times it's those guys that tend to rise in MMA. Yeah. It's not necessarily
You do have Henry Cejudo, right? Henry, who was great. He was the bantamweight champion. Bantamweight or flyweight. I can't remember if he was 125, 135.
I forget.
Yeah. But he was like one of the lighter weight. And he actually had two titles at once.
And he was an Olympic gold medalist. He actually never wrestled in college. He actually went right to freestyle training. Very, very odd case for Henry Cejudo. You know, he's a different kind of dude, and he had a different path. So he's an exception to the rule. There was a guy, Aaron Pico, who about 10, 15 years ago, everybody kind of had Aaron Pico as like the best high school wrestler in the country, right, and had the number, had like the target on him. He was going to be the guy. And then he decided he was going to go all out and be an MMA guy. And like he signed a Bellator deal. I'm not even sure if he's still fighting, to be honest.
He is. He's in this weird thing. I think he might be headed to the UFC. I'm not really sure, because Bellator ended up getting bought out by PFL, the Professional Fighters League. And then they assumed all those contracts, but some of those contracts just never ended up getting honored. And now they're starting to slowly release them. Like they just released Pitbull and some other cats, and Gegard Mousasi just sued them. Like there's a lot going on. So Pico is just kind of like, he's on hold right now, but there was a thought that he was coming right to the UFC. So we'll see on him.
He's
but
young. He's still really young.
He is young, and he was raw. He came in with this great wrestling pedigree, and he was also a Golden Glove boxer, had a lot of power. And, you know, Scott Coker did what Scott Coker does and promoted him against some tomato cans. Like at first he crushed him, and then he threw them in with some real fighters and got his ass kicked a couple of times, but he's still really talented. And he actually did end up beating some pretty good fighters, but we'll see if he has what it takes to make it in the UFC. But yeah, that's I think that's super fascinating. I love having you like as the co-host, because you can actually speak to the NCAA wrestling stuff because you're super like plugged in there. We got a couple guys in the chat, and then we're gonna get to my story. The top. I don't actually mind being the top story of our show. That's okay. Every once in a while, I can be the top story. So we'll get to it. But we got Andre in the chat. He says, "What's good, gentlemen?" King of the North is your friend. He says you're gonna be in the 50 plus bracket.
No, 50 minus bracket, not 50 plus.
Yeah. Well, I think he's calling you old is what he's doing. He's a dick.
I'm freaking old, man. What do you I don't look my age, I don't act my age, I don't feel my age. JD Leave the Last Outlaw. Shit, I'm getting a t-shirt made. Mike, get in the T public.
Yeah. Brother Brad in the house. He said, hey, what's good, guys? Finally remembered to tune in live. I finally remembered what time we're supposed to be on, and I didn't screw us over.
I remembered we had a show this week.
Yeah. Let's see. Suit Williams currently sweating out my national champion before some Sunday collision. For real, man. Sunday collision's coming on tonight.
I forgot about that. Yeah. And there's like a basketball thing going on, right?
So, yeah, March Madness is happening. And then like right after the basketball game, AEW did a smart thing. They broke up collision over two nights, 1 hour each night. So immediately after basketball ends, they go to an hour collision. And then on Saturday and Sunday night, it was taped earlier in the week. So those ratings are going to be through the roof, and it's going to cause a bunch of arguments. And I just fucking cannot wait. It's very much like an inflated rating, you know, like it's fake, but you got to just totally like own it. Like, hell yeah. This is just what they did.
I texted you guys this week. Do you know how I know AEW is back on? Right. Do you know how I know AEW is course corrected? I was on Reddit because I can't be on Twitter anymore. I just don't like it. So I've discovered the mutants of Reddit now. And I see a bunch of people talking about why AEW, there's a bunch of people talking about why AEW is doing it wrong and why they're going to stunt their growth and all this stuff. And it's like, we're back to where we were in 2021 and 2021. We're back to the mutants saying, you know, AEW really is never going to be as big as WWE because da 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 da. Instead of just saying Tony sucks, right? We're back to that. So I feel like, oh, nature is healing. Moxley's making people angry again. Good.
So it's like AEW's at its best when WWE fans hate it, right? Mm-hmm. And like the fed-pilled like operatives for the WWE are out there complaining about it. Because there for a while, like they were trying to make those people happy, and they have ceased to try at all to make those people happy whatsoever. They still do some sports entertainment stuff, but they've always done that. Like they've never not had it. It's always been an element of the show. But there for a while it was overtaking what we loved about AEW. Now they have taken some steps back. Tony Khan took control of the book again. And it seems like it's back to where, like, it's not as far as popularity wise, it's not back to where it was in 2021. I don't know if they'll ever get back there, but right now it's kind of like where my taste is at for AEW. I want WWE to be themselves. I want AEW to be themselves, and I want TNA to be themselves. I want New Japan to be themselves. I don't want them to cross-pollinate and try to copy each other. I like them for different reasons. So when I'm watching them, I want to be like kind of in that universe. I want to be in that mindset. When I'm watching AEW, I want to see like these little fucking shits slapping their legs, kicking out of shit for 20 minutes, right? Like that's what I want to see. So they're getting back to it. And I want to see the death matches.
Yes, this is what I'm saying. It's like I'll make this argument because we had some new people listen to the show that maybe weren't listening to us when AEW was pretty good and I was defending them. There's this idea that got programmed into us because of the quote unquote Monday Night War era. And the people who experience this stuff are in their late 30s and early and 40s right now. So we have to let that go. We have to let the 90s go, guys. This idea that there has like this Highlander-esque idea. By the way, did you see Facebook thinks Christopher Lambert and I are friends? I don't know why, but I really appreciate it. So there's this idea that there can be only one. And like if AEW exists, it must try to be bigger than WWE. And I argue this with people all the time. I say, why? They say, because that's business. I say, really? Pepsi, for the vast majority of its existence, if not 100% of its existence, has been the number two soft drink company in the world. And they don't try to taste like Coca-Cola. They don't try to market like Coca-Cola. They very much have their own deal and have their own fans and do their own thing as the number two. Right?
Yeah.
Burger King has existed. Maybe it's not in a good spot right now, but Burger King is the number two. Wendy's exists. Okay. Taco Bell. Like you said, like you don't have to be the biggest and the most dominant. All you got to do is have a sizable share of the market that serves your fan base to be successful. And I think AEW got away from that. And we talked about this too, because when they were doing their thing, you had stuff like Grand Slam and Arthur Ashe, right? You were doing good business. And then all of a sudden you started to try to be, you know, the bro chachos.
And then goddamn kangaroo kicks.
Like, the kangaroo kicks. And you're trying to have MJF. I don't blame him on this a lot. You try to have MJF out there talking about his different fucking flavors of ice cream and how they're trying to grow the fan base. And Mike, what did that do to the actual fan base?
BOGO Max was then invented on this show, like buy one, get one free. Like the house show business tanked essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're playing like smaller theaters right now on their weekly show, which I happen to think they look awesome. And I think it's cool. Yeah. Like the pay-per-views are still in the bigger ones, but the weekly house shows, the TV shows are in smaller venues now because of that.
And that's the thing is like, what AEW did was they pushed away guys like us, really. Like the hardcores, the guys that want to. It's like, I don't like WWE. I just don't. Like, and I don't want a wrestling company chasing, trying to be another WWE. TNA is at its best when it just does TNA stuff and isn't trying to be WWE. When you have guys like a Jimmy Jacobs in the room, guys who come from Vince, right, trying to tell you what they, this is what WWE does. That's bad. Don't do it. I mean, so one, I bury Eric Bischoff every chance to get, so do you. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. The one thing he did right was he said when Nitro started, he made a list. This is what they do. I can't beat what they do. I can be different. And the more that they try to be different, the better off they are.
Yeah. Dude, the WCW Vault channel on YouTube.
Oh my God. It's
fucking rules, bro. It rules so much. I just like, they have a live feed on there. And so, and I'll just go hit that live feed sometimes when I got the TV to myself. And they'll show like just like 1997 Nitros and shit. And I'm like, dude, the arena setup is so cool. The stage setup is so cool. It's just so much different than what we have right now. It ended up becoming a template for what wrestling should be for a while. And I was like, if you just take a look at it compared to what Raw was at the time, it was just like they were two completely different worlds. And I liked them because they were different worlds. They were completely separate from each other. And that was so cool. But now it's like, you know, I think we're starting to get back to that. And I think Jeff Jarrett said something pretty funny, but like, I don't think I completely disagree with it. He was on his podcast and he said, I think tribalism in pro wrestling is a good thing. He goes like, it's good that each brand has its own core audience. Right. And then now you got people like willing to defend those brands. It's like sporting, it's like sports teams. Right. Like each, like you got the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox, these rabid fan bases, and they're just going at it all the time. And he goes, that's a good thing. I don't know how good that is. But I enjoy playing off of it sometimes, but I think it can be ridiculous. Cause I kind of like, I don't like the Yankees or the Red Sox. I'm a Dodgers fan. I'll watch them on TV, but I'm not going to compliment any of their players. So.
Michael, I'm a White Sox fan, so all I know is pain and misery. I'm going to tell you this right now. I say this a lot again. I think Double J's right. I think the Last Outlaws were correct. Because tell me wrestling wasn't a lot more fun when AEW fans and WWE fans were fighting constantly. And AEW fans actually had something to kind of rely on and go, look, our right. stuff is just as good, if not better, right? Like, it's more, it's not as fun when WWE just trounces over everything and has such an iron grip, right? And it always will, but so will Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola always have that number one spot. It just will. Doesn't mean Pepsi can't exist. Doesn't mean there aren't people in the world who'd rather crack open a Pepsi.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. Okay. So, like I said, I think I was the actual top story tonight. JD, you've been off of Twitter. Did you?
I have no idea what's going on.
You have no idea what's going on? Okay. So this tweet from me.
I love when you get yourself in trouble, by the way, and I don't know about it because then I get to experience it live.
Yeah, because you're just not on Twitter. So I was doing a bit on Twitter the other day, just making a joke. I said, so Lex Luger going into the Hall of Fame, right? And he obviously wants Sting. Sting would make the most sense to induct him into the Hall of Fame. Sting is under contract to AEW. And so Dave Meltzer was on his show. He's like, Dave says that if he was AEW, he wouldn't let Sting induct Lex Luger into the WWE Hall of Fame because of all the times that the WWE has been a dick to AEW, to include the time that Billy Gunn was being inducted into the Hall of Fame as a member of DX. And on the stage, they said he was a part of some pissant company, right? Mm-hmm. And also the fact that during Sting's retirement match, WWE wouldn't let Lex Luger be shown on camera. He wouldn't let him be a part of it. He was in the audience, but he wouldn't let him be a part of the moment. So Dave was saying that because of those reasons, unless there's like a monetary or some specific business deal, that Tony Khan should not let, like, should, Tony Khan doesn't have to be the nice guy in the situation, right? So I did a bit. I made a joke. I said, I'll negotiate on Tony Khan's behalf. I said, dear Triple H, if you want Sting, we need a public apology for your behavior at DX's induction, calling AEW pissant company, and not letting Lex appear on camera during Sting's retirement. Admit to the public that was all bitch behavior in those words, and then we could talk about Sting appearing. We want to make this happen for Lex. Feel free to DM. And so, oddly enough, this went viral. Let's see. Viral for me, like, you know, like people, like 42 bookmarks. And then look at all these blocks I got. I just blocked all these people. Like, I just blocked like person after person. And of course I plugged our YouTube. I just went all in on some of these. So look, I talking about people's moms. I went after some of these guys, but they were coming after me a little bit. Most of it was just, you know, people saying that I'm like, you know, fat, gay, and retarded and all this stuff. It was like a whole day of that stuff.
Can confirm you're neither of those.
Okay. Fat. Maybe. Like, I've been getting a little pudgy since my son was born. I did do 4 miles today because of it, because yesterday went to the beach, right? And I'm like, no shirt on, just holding my son. And he's like on my chest and he kind of slid down. He tried to get the nip. I was like, bro, no milk in that thing. But he didn't know the difference. He was trying to go for the nip. Hungry. I was like, dude, come on. So, they might have got me on the fat thing. The other two things, I was like, I don't know about that. But saying those mean things to me, I was like, calling me gay and retarded. I'm just like, that's like a normal greeting like 15 years ago in my neighborhood. That's like no big deal to me. I walk through that shit. You guys can't. Like, the thing is like, none of these people can get to me. And that's got to be infuriating. I just laugh at them. And then I do the insult block combo to where I will just say something awful and then immediately block them so they can't respond. That is the greatest move, I think, in Twitter. Like, Twitter still has good things to it. And to where you can do an insult block. One guy said, he goes, I bet this guy hasn't lost his virginity. So I, you know, naturally quote tweeted the guy. And I said, I actually lost my virginity years ago and I'd show you the video, but I don't think you want to see your mom like that. And then I blocked him immediately. So just railed on these dudes for like a good 24 hours. You guys can't get to me. I'm too good at this. I am unfuckwithable.
See, we grew up in the 80s and 90s, man. Like, yeah. This kind of language was like part of the course. This is how you just got through the day. Like, someone called you the F word. You're like, I almost said the word because we were so used to saying it when we were growing up.
Right, that, right.
I mean, yeah, I get it. Like, it doesn't matter. Did anybody of consequence respond out of curiosity?
Not
a single person. Just a bunch of versions? Okay.
Like, nameless, faceless trolls. A lot of them were all very similar. So it could have been like a coordinated attack by the Triple H bots, like the Legentil army. They were coming after me.
Yeah. You got Legentiled?
Yeah, I got Legentiled.
I was hoping like a Julian Weeks or Eric Gold. We got
no, but I did make it onto some Facebook accounts, like, you know, some like the WWE lover Facebooks, like, I made it on some of those. And then, there was some, like, I had so many like notifications. I had to mute notice. Cause I just like, it's not that I didn't want to see them. It's like, I'm trying to like scroll and I just like constant notifications.
When, I've had a couple of times. When you go viral, you have to like turn off the notifications because it's just, it's overwhelming. Like you can't, I can't make enough mom jokes, right? You know, like I understand completely. Very proud of you, by the way, for promoting the show in this regard and letting them know exactly the kind of content they could experience in the Mike and JD show. If you like this kind of content, check out the Patreon at patreon.com/the Mike and JD show.
Mike and JD show. Yeah. Fed trolls are welcome. Fedophiles, fed heads, fed trolls, the bots. They're all welcome here. As long as they're willing to spend money on me, I don't care.
Yeah. Give us your money. Tell us how stupid we are. Yeah, check out Mid South Madness by JD. Check out Brace for Impact by Mike. Articles, extra audio. It'd be great. You'll love it.
Yeah. So, okay. JD, if I put you in Tony Khan's position, right? With this whole Lex Luger and Sting situation. I know like a couple of days ago, I was like one way, but like 2 days later, I'm like, I'm taking a different way. What do you think? What do you think Tony should do?
I think he should let Sting be on.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't fucking matter. You know, like it's Sting. Like, I don't want to, if it's anybody else, if they want MJF or something like that, suck my balls. But it's fucking Sting, dude. Sting, like,
and Sting doesn't even like really work there. They just kind of sell his merch now.
Right. Exactly. And Sting is just, and Sting is super loyal to AEW. He knows that they gave him the best close of a career that possibly could have happened. He knows WWE did him wrong, but it's Lex Luger, right? Like Lex going in the Hall of Fame without Sting doesn't feel right. So I think Tony will do the right thing and not because he'll get anything from WWE in response, but because it's the right thing. And just, it doesn't fucking matter. They're never going to help you. They're going to try to crush you every opportunity they get. And it doesn't matter. They're not going to ever help you. They're not going to ever do anything. And all you do is get a bunch of fucking pissed off virgins mad at you. And it just, it's not worth it. Who cares? Let's stay into it.
Yeah. So at first I was like, screw them. Like, don't do them any favors or like make it a business deal, you know, some type of business transaction, like try to get some, I think Dave said it on Friday, but somebody else was saying this to me. He's like, he should at least try to get some like footage or something like that. Some like real light for Sting. Like if they want to do a video on Sting, you know what I mean? Like if they're going to, maybe they produce their own documentary, like AEW does, something like that, you know, license some WCW footage, but
I guess you could do that. But I mean, like they're not going to do it anyway. Like they remember when they gave him for the John Cena thing, they gave him Bryan Danielson and they gave him
Big Show.
Somebody else, Big Show. Yeah. And like, they're not gonna, I mean, like Triple H is such a, I'm gonna get him now. Triple H is such an insecure, tight-assed person that he will go above and beyond to make sure that everybody else feels that they are beneath him, because that, like his, and think about the entrance, the Triple H entrance at WrestleMania. That's him. That's how he views himself in his head. And only an insecure person would do that. Like the MJF character, the insecure MJF character, right? That's actually Paul Levesque. That's Paul Levesque, the human being. Right. And it's just, you're not going to get anything. And Nick Khan don't fucking care.
No,
you know,
Nick Khan's only about business. So he wouldn't care.
Wouldn't give a shit one way or the other.
And here's the thing that I've learned. Like I've never met Tony. I've never talked to Tony. We know people that know him like a little bit. Here's one thing that I think that I know about him. I could be wrong, but this is what I think I know about him. I think he really wants to be liked by wrestling fans. Yeah. I think he wants to come across as the good guy. And a few months ago, Ricky Starks was at an indie show, right? And the crowd started chanting, fuck TK. They started chanting that at like an indie show. And we said it last week, TK was the protected species among our peers, right? Because he's like the nice guy that is also a wrestling promoter. And he was getting heat for being like too nice. And then, so that's why he's like holding these people hostage, right? Well, hostage. He's paying these motherfuckers a lot of money, right? Like Starks and Phoenix and Pent, like they're all getting paid a lot of money to not come to work. I don't feel sorry for them people one bit, right? But because those chants started at that indie show, like almost within like a couple of weeks, boom, Ricky Starks get released. Pentagon's gone. Like,
if I had not thought about that.
Phoenix is now gone. Malachi Black is gone, right? I get the feeling Camille is probably, like, next, right? Like, the people that are there, Miro gets his release, right? So it all kind of, like, I could be wrong about this, right? So somebody could fact check me in the comments, like, that's fine. I'm wrong sometimes, but that's just my read on the situation. He wants to maintain the moral high ground. And at a certain point, despite all of the things like WWE's history, he lost the moral high ground at one point because of this like Guantanamo Bay, like meme that was all over Twitter. And he doesn't like that. I think he's going to do it. I think he's going to let Sting go because at the end of the day, you gain some like affection probably from some of your friends, right? Like some of your friends, like, hey, you did the right thing, but WWE is going to think that you're weak and they're counting on that. Like Dave was saying, the WWE trolls on Twitter are never going to respect you anyway.
Correct.
And then some of you, even your own fans are like, well, you shouldn't have done that because it's WWE and it's like Democrats versus Republicans. And you can't talk to the other side, right? Like once somebody goes over the other side, like now they're fucking enemies, right? Like CM Punk is like the worst guy in the world. Andrade is like a loser now. Phoenix and Pentagon, who bled buckets in AEW, are like assholes now, right? Because they want to go to the other side. So like, because he's like doing a favor for them, knowing that he'll never get it reciprocated, people are going to have a little bit less respect for him. But you know who will respect him a lot? Lex.
Sting.
Lex is in a fucking wheelchair, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and he's trying to like start walking again. That's what this is about. I think he does it. Maybe he gets something out of it. I don't know. Like, remember what TNA did back in the day when they let Flair go to the Hall of Fame? Mm-hmm. Christian came on and like he would rather be anywhere else but TNA, but they told Christian to go to Slammiversary and introduce a video package. Something. I don't think they do something like that, but there's got to be something that like that they could do as far as a business deal. Maybe something like that happens, or it could be no strings attached. I don't know, but I get the feeling Sting's going to be there.
I think so too. I don't think they'll get anything back. And I think it doesn't really matter. Like you said, the WWE trolls are never going to respect Tony anyway. Jim Cornette will complain no matter what Tony does. Like if Tony decides to let Sting go, Travis Heckle will draw some horrible art about Tony being a dick. And then if he lets him do it, Travis Heckle will draw some horrible art about Tony being a wuss, because you can't win. Like Tony, this is okay. If there's one thing you can learn from Vince McMahon, and I hate saying this, but this is the truth. If there's one thing you can learn from Vince McMahon, it's not to give a shit about what anybody thinks of you and just do your thing. That is the one. Now, he used it for evil, but I mean, you could take that lesson and apply it. And that was how Tony used to be, right? There was a time when before Brody Lee died, Tony was rarely in front of the camera. You know, he rarely had that public persona. After Brody Lee passed, he really became more a part of things. And I think we should go back. I think it's starting to kind of go back the other way. If I were Tony, I would make myself less of a public presence, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
But I think he should do it just because Lex would appreciate it and Sting would appreciate it. And then that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
At the end of the day,
Tony is really good friends with Dana White. I think he actually reveres Dana White. And he modeled the way he runs his company after Dana runs the UFC.
That's true.
Even doing the pre and post conferences, like that was Dana doing the scrums, even calling it the scrum. That's all Dana White. Mm-hmm. Right. And so he was trying to be there for Tita's and Dana White. And it's like, you really just need to get your own Dana White, right? Like run the business, book the company, let somebody else be like the face of the company. I think Cody tried to be that.
Yeah, but we kind of had that guy for a while.
Yeah, you know, somebody that's not wrestling, somebody that's not in the ring, right?
You know what Tony should do? He should say, yes, I want Cody to make an appearance on our next pay-per-view.
Yeah, that'd be like, get fun.
Never going to happen, but it would be just great. And they'd say, okay, fine, here's Sting. Just to see.
Yeah, that's funny. So let's go. We got one more AEW topic, and then we got to get to a couple of significant deaths that are in and around the world of wrestling that I do want to talk about. Did you get a chance to watch Dynamite? I know your power was out for a while, right?
Dude, I've not had a chance. I got to watch. I watched Dynamite through clips on YouTube this week.
Okay. Did you see the John Moxley clip?
I did see that.
What? So that's getting some steam. A lot of people think that was disgusting. It was too much. It's not what wrestling is supposed to be. It's you know, AEW is going to die because of it. It's a deathmatch, garbage, bullshit wrestling.
Outlaw Mud Show,
absolutely. What John Moxley drove 11 hours in the snow to go get himself thrown on nails. He's an idiot. I think a lot of things are true about that thing. I think it was awesome, but I also like, I never want to see anything like that ever again. Cause that made me squeamish. I was like, that's not what Mike watches wrestling for. But you know what? Like when, so that board with the nails, that's Janice from TNA, right? That's a business gimmick. It's the same thing. And I was always very critical of them introducing it. Cause I was like, you guys are never going to slam anybody on that. Cause it would impale them and it would, you're never going to get that on TV. And it took over 10 years for that gimmick to finally pay off, but somebody finally got suplex on it and those nails were fucking sticking out of his back. And it was one of the grossest things I've ever seen in my life.
I completely agree with you. I think it was absolutely disgusting, but it's Jon Moxley. Jon Moxley is the modern day Terry Funk. And he can do
100%.
And he can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants. Terry Funk went to Japan and did disgusting stuff. Right. Yeah. You can tell me this isn't wrestling is supposed to be, but you can't tell me how much you love Mick Foley. Right. Where Mick Foley made his name, really made a huge thing for himself doing the IWA King of the Deathmatch with Terry Funk. Like, you cannot tell me that there is not a place for this. Now, is there a place for this in mainstream wrestling? Not in WWE.
Nope.
But why not? Why not with AEW? We've seen this before. Yeah. We've seen this before. I've heard this argument before with Nick Gage and the Pizza Cutter. Boy, that guy had one appearance in AEW, and boy, did he make an impact. Like, I don't care. Is it going to change? Is one AEW fan going to leave? Going to stop watching because of this? No.
No, I did see some like media guys saying I'm never watching AEW again, and I was just like, come on, all right.
Heard that before. Yeah. Who said? I'm curious. Who said that? Did you?
Jeremy Botter, Flow Slam guy, Jeremy Botter.
Oh, Flow Slam guy. Okay.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on Flow. That's one of, by the way, is one of wrestling's great all-time failures. Flow Slam. Nice job.
Yeah.
I remember Wade Keller before the week before it got announced, like the wrestling is going to change. This is going to make a big deal in wrestling. It was done in a year. It's whatever. I mean, I have this crazy theory that I think Jon Moxley is the only true heel in professional wrestling because everybody hates him.
Yeah. He's doing a pretty good job of getting hated.
He's like legitimately. Now you can argue. We had a buddy that argued with us that night when I mentioned that, and he goes, it's not the right kind of heat. And I'll say it's not hurting business. It's not.
We thought that it was for a while, but then when that Revolution number came out, I was like, you know what? Maybe we were wrong about this. Like maybe I don't want to say it's not working for my taste. Right. So there's a difference. It wasn't working for my taste, but it did business. Mox and Edge did business.
But it was a great show. We want to see, and by the way, Bob Backlund did great business with.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Phenomenal undercards too. This isn't like the first time it's happened. Like, I'm of the mind that people want to see Moxley lose the title.
Could be. Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's the wrong type of heat until things start going bad. Like things for AEW, we talked about it last week and made a lot of people angry that things are actually ticking in the right direction. It's not going to be overnight, but the Moxley character, while it's not exciting and it's not what we want from him, perhaps this is what, and I've always thought about this, like maybe a heel should be like, I don't know if it's good for business, but I think it's a noble experiment. Take a guy who is absolutely beloved by an audience. This audience loved Jon Moxley. Like, he was the embodiment of AEW 6 years ago, right? You leave the evil empire, you come to the upstart, and you do your thing. You paint your, what do you say? Play your music your way, was what he said, right? Yeah. And now you're the most hated guy in the company. Like, legitimately, people legitimately hate watching him wrestle. Like, that's like, he's the only heel in pro wrestling.
Yeah. He is. He's, we'll see. Like, I think the Death Riders angle for the most part up until Revolution was a big flop.
Not good.
Right. Not good. Like, house shows were down, everything was down, but then it seems like Revolution things picked back up. We'll see what happens with Dynasty. We'll see if Mox versus Swerve does business. I'm curious about that. And then we'll see what they get at, you know, we got Double or Nothing and All In. I don't think that one event can tell the entire story of his run. You know what I mean? So no. We'll see where it goes.
We will say this, though. It was Dynasty tickets were a struggle to sell, and they're up 1,300 since the announcement. Right? Yeah. Now we got to see what the actual work going in will be.
Now they got to hit the ground and promote. Now they got to hit the ground and promote in that area.
And they're not running a giant arena. They're only running 6,000 people. So, I mean, yeah. Like, they should be okay. Like, they're being very conservative, right? Very bullish when they're running. They're not running a giant market in Philly. And quite honestly, that's smart because Philly is a WWE town, and you don't want to run big places in WWE towns.
Dynasty is in St. Louis. I thought it was in Philadelphia. No, it's in Philly. Okay, my bad. No.
Okay, thank you.
Dynasty was in St. Louis last year. I'm sorry.
No, we're good. I had an argument. I was like, did I just lose my whole argument? No, I stand by what I said. Yeah, I think that it's smart. I think they're running a smaller building. I think they're running the temple, right, where the college is. Yeah. That's fine. That's what they got to run right now. I want you
to look. I heard that neighborhood's a dump, by the way. Like, from a guy I know. He's just like, why would it? Because
Philadelphia dump. Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I mean, they have shitty football. I mean, I know they won the Super Bowl, but they still suck. So.
Fuck them.
Fuck them. Yeah. You want to know why the Eagles suck? Because fuck them. That's why.
Fuck them. Why?
Yeah. But so it's so funny. A buddy of mine is from Philly and was talking with the guy who does live events for TNA. And he was like, hey, when are you guys coming back to Philly? And he's like, we can't run the 2300 arena anymore because we've outgrown that arena. We're doing, you know, 3,000 to 4,000 seats now. You can't get that many people in that arena. And the other option would be the La Cora Center, but that's in like a sketch neighborhood, and they can't run the bigger one, the one that the 76ers play in, because that's just way too big. So they got to find like a better venue for them. But so like TNA is running into those kind of problems.
Good
so.
For TNA.
Yeah.
That's where their business is at right now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's good. I mean, I think that it's going to be an interesting test. I don't think Philly is going to be a great AEW town just because of it. If you're not running the 2300, right, you got to run this one. And it's WWE is pretty hot right now. And TNA fans are very loyal to TNA. So it's different. So I'm curious to see how this turns out. But I think that, I missed Dynamite this week, so I cannot speak to Mox's word.
Dynamite was like, outside of that match, it was just like, for me, it was like a decent episode. But the main event was Megan Bain versus Statlander. And the match was like good, but the only reason I watched it is because I had nothing else to watch.
What do you think of Megan Bain? Do you think they're pushing her too hard too soon?
Probably, but I think they see a lot in her. And so it's like the old adage. Like, if you think someone's a main eventer, you put them in the main event. Yeah. And then eventually they just grow into the position. I think that she's talented. She got a great look. She's a bit green. Like, she doesn't have the same. She did work Japan for a while, and she's like, her work is getting better. But I don't think she knows how to work TV yet. There is an art to working TV that you don't like actually learn on the indies and stuff like that. So I think she's going to be just fine. A lot of people are being like pretty tough on her, but I'm like, you know what? Let's wait and see on this one. I think that she could actually end up being something.
I'm a fan. I like the look. I like her work style. I've been like just peripheral talking to our buddy Scott and stuff like that for a while. And I know she's been like aligned with them for a minute. So
yeah.
I do wonder if it's too much too soon, if they shouldn't have just had her keep squashing people for a while. Charisma seems to be a concern.
Yeah.
Like, she has good physical charisma, but it doesn't
the facial expressions and the emoting, which I think is like just her, because did you watch that video of Joey Janela getting jumped by this guy, Dylan Bostic, at like an autograph signing?
I heard about it, but I did not see it.
Dude, it's the video is so fucking funny. So like, Janela's just there at like an autograph table, right? And this guy, Dylan Bostic, he's just an indie guy that they had been beefing for years because
follows everyone on Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. He would like follow me and unfollow me for years, and I just ended up blocking him. He's like one of those guys.
Ditto.
Yeah. So he ends up like has like a crew with him, like a guy videoing it, and he confronts Joey Janela, flips his autograph table over, and just starts swinging on him. And then like Janela's friends just end up beating the shit out of this guy. Like, even Masha Slamovich is in there like just stomping this dude out. Right. It's like the thing just goes complete sideways for this guy. He ends up going on Twitter talking about how he kicked Joey Janela's ass. Like, bro, we see the video. You got your ass kicked. So he ends up deleting the video because he's like, yeah, you're right. I did get my ass kicked. But he's like trying to go out and tell you he kicked Joey Janela's ass.
Worker.
Janela didn't beat him up, but Janela and his friends like got the better of him, if that makes sense. Well, in the background is Megan Bain. Not doing a goddamn thing.
Smart.
Just staying out of it. Like, that's her boyfriend, which Joey Janela, what a Like, come on.
Joey Janela's dating Megan Bain?
Yes.
Dude, that dude's got a hit list, man. I'm hit my cap to him.
Yeah. So, but anyway, but like no expression, just kind of just like watching. It's like it was pretty funny. But I think she could end up being something someday. We'll see. But I thought Dynamite was a pretty good. What's that?
I think she's a mouthpiece.
I think that mouthpieces are underutilized all over professional wrestling.
I agree.
I think that I think AEW. I don't think Camille failed in AEW. I think AEW failed Camille. Right. She's big. She's got a good look. I think she could have done something, but they say, okay, you know what? You can't go out there and have a 20-minute match with Queen Aminata, then you suck. And so now you're on the sidelines. So maybe she has heat. So I don't like throwing. I like the old school mentality. If we got this person with the star look, but they can't do everything that the other guys can do, let's just work around it and then develop them over time. You know what I mean? Let's give them a manager. Like they gave Lex Luger a manager, right? And he just developed all of his skills over time and became, like, in my opinion, one of the all-time greats. But he was never Ricky Steamboat because he didn't have to be. Like you don't like Megan Bain is a giant. She doesn't need to be fucking. You know. She doesn't need to be Riho or Momo Watanabe. Like she doesn't need to be that.
By the late it took Luger a good decade plus, but by the mid to late 90s, he was pretty freaking good.
He was.
You watch those early Nitros, like the Sting Luger angle where they're the tag team champs, one's a baby face, one's a heel. That's really good stuff.
Fantastic.
And Luger carries Hogan, quite frankly, to a really good Nitro main event where they flipped the title. They really didn't have to, but they kind of wanted to spike business a little bit. But I mean, it's Luger's only world title reign, so it's kind of cool at the same time. Like, I think there's something to that. But I mean, Luger always had something. Yeah. I think they kind of pulled the plug on the Camille and Mercedes thing too quickly.
I did too. They didn't mention her. Like, she's still under contract there, and it boggles my mind. She's all over that Queen of the Ring movie. She's one of the stars of the movie, and they didn't even mention it.
She must have heat. Mercedes
must just hate her. I think. Like, hold on, we got a transferring heat. Camille got hit by a Mercedes. Yeah,
like, yeah, kind of.
That could have been Mercedes, as we know, has some pull.
Yeah, she does. They got like Stokely Hathaway there. Like they've got guys who can like Mark Sterling. They got guys who could cut promos. I don't know why they don't steer into that more. Like I don't think managers are a bad thing in wrestling. I think we need more of them, quite frankly.
Yeah. I think we do. I think instead of, you know, cutting bait on somebody and giving up on somebody, like have them work with a manager. That's how these people got so good over time. Like they didn't just cut like these people don't, a lot of the, like our greatest wrestlers didn't come into the wrestling business like automatically amazing.
No.
Steve Austin was groomed by Paul Heyman at like a young age, right? Like as his mouthpiece, as his manager. Right. And there's like countless guys where that was the case. And so
Steve Austin was like thought to like people like I love how WWE tries to play off like Steve Austin came from the gutter. Like Steve Austin, from the moment he walked into professional wrestling, was a main eventer in Texas. Like
Chris rookie Adams, of the year in 1990.
In the dying days of World Class.
Right.
Right. The dying days of GWF. Like Chris Adams saw this dude and was like, I can make money with that guy. Like,
yeah, I'll just give him my wife and then we'll have a feud.
Sure did work, and it drew a lot of it drew money in Texas, man. Yeah. And then he went, but he was in he was a WCW World Television Champion 1 year into the business.
Yeah.
He was in the business for one. Imagine that now. Imagine a person with 1 year experience being given the title and being as damn good as Steve Austin was right away. So I think Steve Austin's a weird one, but it did. It took him a long time to really be Steve Austin.
Yeah.
You know, even with all those tools, it was a really good example there, Mike.
Yeah. All right. So we got some unfortunate news. So this one, we got two significant deaths, at least to me. And I think, you know, some of you guys, if you're a little bit older, you'll understand what I'm talking about. A longtime WCCW World Class Championship Wrestling announcer, Bill Mercer, has died. He passed away at the age of 95. I think he died today.
99.
What's that?
I read 99. He was 99 years old.
99? Okay. I might have his age wrong, but definitely him and Cowboy Bob Ellis are like the two oldest living. Like Mercer was never a professional wrestler, but people in the wrestling business. So as far as we know, he was the play-by-play announcer for World Class Championship Wrestling during the 80s and its peak and its heyday. He also had a significant career in sports broadcasting and news reporting, including a notable role in covering the JFK assassination. On November 22nd, 1963, Mercer was a news anchor for and reporter for Dallas radio station KRLD. He was the first reporter to inform Lee Harvey Oswald that he would be charged with murder for the assassination of John F. Kennedy. So Oswald had no idea at this point, or at least he was maybe working a gimmick, but like, he was like, no one's told me anything. I haven't been charged with anything. And Mercer was like, no, you have been charged. And he had a look on his face, like a shocked look on his face. He also spent 35 years teaching sports broadcasting at the University of North Texas, which is, they're one of the more famous alums, North Texas.
Isn't that where Steve Austin went?
Steve Austin, yes. Yep, Steve Austin and the Green Machine. He was a fullback for them.
Division two.
He also was the announcer for the Dallas Texans of the American Football League back in the day, and then later for the Dallas Cowboys. He was of that old guard where he was like him and Lance Russell, they were like legit newsmen. And other territories had that too, but they're like legit, like local icons in their community, and were the top announcer for the pro wrestling company, which then ultimately legitimized those companies.
Dude, Bill Mercer had this like Cronkite-esque delivery to his wrestling. Like, when you listen to world-class championship wrestling at the Von Erich era, like Mercer had this great inflection in his voice every time. Like, if you go back and watch the Freebird Von Erich stuff, you're listening to Bill Mercer. He was just so... I freaking loved listening to Mercer. He just brings this gravitas to especially like World Class, which was kind of a, you know, I don't know if I call it a blood and guts promotion, but it was pretty serious. Like, they didn't do a lot of silly shit. They did they did tons of silly shit, but not on purpose. Yeah. Not on purpose in Texas.
Well, they had Jimmy Garvin out there on the farm with the fucking Von Erichs with David. That was so funny.
That was pretty great. That was intentionally silly. But I mean, like as in the ring, I'm talking about when you listen, we talked about it on our Patreon show last week. Carrie and Ric Flair in the cage when Gordy slams the cage door, Mercer's on the call, and it's just awesome. Like, he's an example of one of those guys who brings this realism and gravitas to something that could be kind of silly with another guy giving it, right?
Yeah,
and he's the voice of World Class Championship Wrestling, and the world's a worse place without him.
Yeah, it is. You know, a couple years ago, you know, I'm a big JFK guy. Yeah. I'm not going through these files, but I'm listening to the people that are actually reading these files. So I'm kind of like in it. And I am in the middle of rewatching the documentary from a couple years ago. I think it might have been 2 years ago. National Geographic, where Bill Mercer was actually like featured throughout the entire thing. Like, he was one of the top characters in that, because he's one of the few like guys from that era that were still alive that actually reported on it. And he was like on the ground reporting it. I think he might've been there when Oswald was shot too.
I think he was there when Oswald was shot.
Yeah. He was there for like the whole thing, dude. He is like a feature character in that story. And he is a pro wrestling legend. So to have like those two worlds connect for me was always pretty cool.
Mike Gilbert Venn diagram right there.
Yeah. It's like, if you're involved in the J, maybe he did it. Who knows? Maybe he was like the man in the hat behind the grassy knoll. Had a buddy of mine in Texas. He just randomly texted me last night. He goes, "Hey man, I just drove by Dealey Plaza." I was like, did you see where the CIA killed him? He goes, "I'm looking, man. I'll try to find it."
didn't we do a Patreon show a few years ago where like we argued the Kennedy assassination?
Yeah. Well, we did. It was the 60th anniversary of the assassination. We didn't really argue, because like, I don't even know where I stand on it. I just find the whole story fascinating. I think all of the theories surrounding it are infinitely fascinating. And anytime I see a documentary on it, I just watch it. So there's been a lot of new stuff out with all these documents that got released. Nothing really that says like who did it, right? But like the wild stuff that the CIA was involved in that we always thought they were involved in, we have the evidence of all these things that they were doing. Like, it's wild shit, man.
They're pretty fucked up, man.
Yeah.
It's the CIA is what you think it is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. If you guys want to know if there was ever a deep state, and like I say, I'm not afraid of deep state Fed trolls. That's my thing for today. But if you want to know if there wasn't a deep state, just look at these JFK files, and there absolutely was. And so not even like the head honchos of the CIA knew what was going on. All right. Mm-hmm. But off of that, we also lost a guy that was in pro wrestling several times, but boxing legend George Foreman.
Yeah.
Big George, one of the greatest heavyweight champions of all time. hardest hitters. Like, this dude was like the scariest dude on the planet in the 1970s, bro. He won the Olympics, I think. In, when did he win the Olympics? 1968?
68.
I think it was 68. And then he ends up, you know, Ali has to go away for a little while, you know, got some heat for not wanting to go to Vietnam. He takes off for a little while. And this guy just fucking crushes Joe Frazier, dude. Like, mm-hmm. within two
beats
rounds.
His ass. Beats
down
his
goes
ass.
Frazier is down goes Frazier is like the famous call there. And was the scariest brother on the planet until Ali rope-a-doped him in the Rumble in the Jungle. So he ended up taking some time off. It took like 10 years off. He went and became a preacher, and then he came back to boxing to raise money for his church, and then ends up becoming the world heavyweight champion again like 5 years later, defeating Michael Moore. Defeating him.
Michael Moore, that's right. He did beat Michael. Who did Michael Moore beat for the title? Did he beat Tommy Morrison? Is that right?
Yes, he did, but I don't think he beat him for the title, but he did beat Tommy Morrison.
I thought he might have beat him for the title. I can't remember that. That's like the George, I remember when we were kids, the George Foreman comeback was like epic. Like, it's like, it was like Rocky, but it was like real life. You had this 40 guy, our age, dude. He was our age as the world heavyweight champion.
He was 44 when he won the world heavyweight title, dude. And I was watching that fight live. Like, that was a big deal in the Gilbert household. We had like the illegal cable box hooked up, and like everybody sitting around the TV watching George Foreman and Michael Moore. Like, nobody thought he had a chance because Michael Moore was a good fighter.
He was a good fighter.
He was never the same after that, but he was a really good fighter.
Dude, that was actually a really good era for heavyweights too. Yeah. Like, this is in the middle of Vander Holyfield's like prime, and you had Riddick Bowe and Lennox Lewis, Michael Moore, and then all of a sudden
Ray Mercer.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden George freaking Foreman comes out of nowhere. And there was a bunch of titles at the time too. But the fact that George Foreman did lay claim to one of the world heavyweight titles, you're younger than me. God, he seems so old at the time. I feel so old right now.
Yeah.
The fact that he was able to do that, what a legend. Do you believe Hulk Hogan? Because remember, we were also, hold on, okay.
I have notes on this, by the way. I prepared for this conversation, but go ahead.
Oh, good. So, like, when I was in college, the George Foreman Grill was all the rage. So, you guys who don't know this, the George Foreman Grill was, like, this press grill. And had, like, it was, like, basically an iron, right? It was essentially an iron.
Yeah. It has since been replaced by the air fryer. But I had it whenever I was in college, too. And I actually grilled steaks on it and grilled chicken because I didn't have like a charcoal grill because I just had an apartment. I couldn't have a charcoal grill, and I didn't want to cook it. I was like, oh, I don't want to cook it on a frying pan. I want the lines. So I got the Foreman grill, and it was like, it's the same thing as putting in a fucking frying pan. It was the same
100% the same thing, but you plugged it in, and you just like, no, when you're a college kid, you couldn't have like had that stuff. And I was an athlete too. So we were eating like chicken breast, like there was no tomorrow. You throw it on that Foreman, sizzle that thing up. I had a roommate who's like, yeah, the greatest part of the Foreman is you don't have to clean it. And we're going, wait, what? You don't clean my Foreman? And then I put my Foreman on there once and black ooze dripped out of it. And I'm like, I can't use this thing anymore, man. But yeah, so the apocryphal story, because Hulk Hogan lies. Hulk Hogan, the same Hulk Hogan that claims he was offered the bass position in Metallica that went to Jason Newsted, says that the George Foreman grill was originally meant for him, but he missed the phone call. And they went down to the next guy in the list, who was George Foreman. Right. Mike, do we believe the Hulkster in this one?
Not even a little bit.
Not even.
You know, like, I, but you know what I do believe? I believe the Hulk believes it. I think Hulk is just he has just bullshitted so much that after a while he starts believing his own bullshit. I believe that he thinks that he was offered a spot in Metallica. And probably what happened is after Cliff Burton died, right? And they're looking for a bass player. Somebody got drunk and was like, Hulk can do it. And now ever since then, he's like believed that he had a shot. I think it's like a similar thing. Like Jimmy Hart was like, oh man, that was supposed to be you, but we didn't answer the call, baby. Like, it could have been like that right there. And he's taking it. And now it's living a life of its own. It's like, I could have been a billionaire, brother, but I missed the phone call.
Dude, that's the funniest part. I truly think you're right. I think Hulk has told so many lies over the years that his brain cannot separate reality from fiction anymore. Like, he is like the living work. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's the funny part is like when Cliff Burton died, like Hulk Hogan was in the middle of his like 4-year run as champion. Like, the thought of the whole thing is ridiculous to think about, but he truly believes he could have been the bass player for Metallica. He truly believes that he should have.
Hey, Vince, brother, got these guys, this band, dude, Metallica. You ever heard of him, brother? No, well, they're the probably one of the biggest bands. They just had their first video, so we know they're ready to make some money, brother.
That's and, before they had their first video. Like Cliff Dies After Master of Puppets, they were still kind of underground. They were the
their first video was one, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was Injustice for All. So Cliff Burton dies when?
After Master.
Cliff after never Master
recorded.
Puppets, okay.
Cliff never so recorded.
It was Kill 'Em All, Master, and then Ride the Lightning, and then...
Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, then Master.
Then Master, and then, and Justice for All was after that. So correct. It was like, right, so I had my timeline down. So like, you know, they're, okay, I was pretty close, but like, right. Like oh, hey, brother, they're, I'm going to be in the band, dude. Eventually, we're going to get them to cut their hair and we'll go to do some unplugged, brother. You know, it's like, I think they're ready to make some money, brother. I don't think this wrestling business is out for me. And like, he was not in a heavy metal band, by the way. No. He was a legit bass player.
He was
like a legit, like that's how he got discovered. He was a bass player in Florida, but in like a funk band Yeah.
Like the whole timeline is ridiculous, but the fact that I don't think you're right. I think he truly believes all these insane things. Like he'd be like, oh, I thought Andre was going to beat me that night, man. The dude could barely walk. Like,
yeah.
What? I tore every muscle in my back when I slammed him. Like, you didn't. You worked like 2 weeks later. Like, it's just. But again, that's the Hulk Hogan.
My. I know. We're supposed to pay tribute to George, but I mean, we can't not talk Hulk Hogan.
We are paying tribute to George by talking about what an idiot Hulk Hogan is.
Yeah, but and we'll circle back to George. We got a little bit of time. We're over the hour, but who cares? Yeah. We went a little bit early tonight, but so one of my favorite lies that he ever told is a completely like provable lie. And Undertaker has talked about this several times because he's still pissed about it. He fucking hates it. So when Undertaker beats Hogan for the title, Hogan was like worried sick that Undertaker was going to give him the tombstone and like break his neck. Right.
Okay. Well, did you see how Undertaker used to get the tombstone? The old school tombstone, he did it over the shoulder and he was fucking crushing these job guys with it. So I kind of get where Hogan's coming from.
Yeah. On that one. So I could see Hogan being nervous. Plus Hogan's like pretty beat up. He was like 35. He was like he is way too overweight, right? Like there's way too much muscle mass on him and his back was jacked up. Knees were jacked up already by the time he's 35, which is one of the reasons why, like other than the steroid scandal, like Vince was ready to kind of move on. But so he gives him the tombstone pile driver and he's like 6 inches off the ground. Doesn't even come close to it. And afterwards he's like saying that Undertaker broke his neck. Right. So now Undertaker has heat with everybody. And then they rewind the video and it's like, no, like you didn't even come close. He's like, oh, well, it was just the jar, brother, for whenever you hit your knees. But he didn't even come close. He told that story for years that Undertaker broke his neck when he didn't even come close.
Undertaker believed it for years.
Yeah. Until he watched the video back.
Yeah. And it was like years, like 10 some odd years afterwards. And he's like, that fucking liar. I didn't come anywhere close to it. Yeah. Like he felt so guilty for hurting. Cause think about it. In the late 80s, early 90s, you killed the golden goose. Like Hogan was the reason why everybody was making all kinds of money and nobody wanted to be the guy to hurt Hulk Hogan. Right. And here's Undertaker who would just like, a year earlier, this is 91, right? So I was 91. Yeah. He debuted in WWF out of nowhere, essentially, a year earlier. Like, he gets a rocket strap to the world title. He really does.
Yeah.
And he's beating Hulk Hogan for it. It's like, oh, I just murdered him.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, to get back to George Foreman, like this dude in the 70s, when I say he was a killer, like some of you guys, like young cats, if you don't know anything about boxing, think Mike Tyson in the 80s. That was George Foreman in the 70s. Like
But bigger.
Right. Just like the scare. And like, he wasn't like the lovable fat guy that you saw in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Like he was a lean, mean, like big, scary, like hated the world type guy. Whenever he swung on you, it was the most ill-intentioned punch you've ever seen in your fucking life. Like this guy wanted to kill you every time he swung at you. It was insane.
He had, like, in the 70s, there was this, like, let's talk about, like, relate race relations a little bit. Like, Ali was kind of the enemy in the 60s, but by the time the 70s come around, like, the world has kind of accepted Ali, right? Yeah. And Ali becomes a hero, right? Which is weird. Like, he had this baby face turn, because, I mean, like, it came with Cosell, because Cosell loved him. And then ever since when he came back, everybody loved Ali. Everybody loved Ali. People hated Foreman. Yeah. Like, he was, like, the angry black man, which is, like, you know, stupid for me to say that, but that's how people looked at things in the 70s. Like, well,
and Ali, Ali was a part of that, right? He was.
Oh yeah, he played into it.
Big time. Getting like white people to hate Foreman.
Yes, because right? Yeah. Ali was a pro wrestler at heart.
Yes,
and like, oh my gosh, yeah, it was the Rumble in the Jungle.
Yes,
it was Ali the rope, the famous rope-a-dope? Ali very famously figures out how to beat George Foreman by just he just crowded him and just ate a bunch of body shots. And yeah. New Foreman wouldn't have the gas to go on. So Ali would just eat the body shots. And at the end of every round, Ali would just hit a couple jabs, boom, 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 boom in the face. And he was racking up some points. And then by the end of the fight, Foreman can barely pick his damn fight, his arms up. And Ali gets some good shots in at the end. Because Ali in the 70s couldn't move like Ali in the 60s could.
Yeah. Yeah. So he had to like fight smarter, which is why Muhammad Ali is in my opinion, the greatest of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because he was able to come back and win that world title and then go on another run, and then like his body kind of started to fail him and his head started to fail him after a while, and he had those like disastrous fights with fucking Spinks, and of course you know, beating Spinks, but like he lost to Spinks and he beat him, and then Larry Holmes was like, and then he lost to Trevor Burbick, and I was like, oh man, this brother's
he was old at that point. Like they think they look back on it, they look at some of the series for Joe Frazier. He eats a lot of shots to the head, and there's thoughts that a lot of the there's actually a lot of theories that a lot of Parkinson's can come from CTE and from concussions, and like there's a lot of linkage to the
I believe it. Yeah.
Me too. And you look back at some of those fights with Frazier, and my God, does he eat a ton of shots to the head.
Yeah,
because he never really fights the same.
The third fight, man.
The third fight is the one specifically they look back on. They're like, look at this. That was the Thrill in Manila, I believe, was the third fight. So, yeah.
I'm trying to remember if that was – because the first one was in Madison Square Garden.
That's where Frazier wins.
Yeah. Yeah, then, well, because that was Ollie – it wasn't Ollie's comeback fight, but that was like – that was on his comeback tour.
Yeah, he wouldn't fight anybody right away. They, again, give him a couple tomato cans to get him warmed up for that. But he wasn't – remember, Ollie lost his best years to being in – not prison, but I mean, like Ali was basically banned during his best years as a fighter.
He protested Vietnam, and I've had this argument with people, and there is no more argument. He was not a draft dodger, right? There were draft dodgers that absolutely fled the country, or they got their rich parents to get them out of the war. He stood up to the government, and said, "Fuck you, I'm not going."
Yeah, he just said, "I'm not doing it."
Yeah, he just said, "I'm not dodging the draft. I'm standing up to you. I'm not going because I don't believe in it." And I was like, and they're like, Mike, he's your hero. Like legit, you go to my garage right now and it's like a picture. I got this big frame thing of Ollie standing over Sonny Liston. So like, of course.
One of the greatest sports pictures of all time.
He's absolutely my hero, right? Big time. And so, he says, Mike, that's still your hero. You're a military guy. You deployed twice. Why would you respect him so much? Because like he stood up and said, I'm not going. Had he hit, I would have a different opinion.
You chose that. That's the difference. It's like, it's a different world. Like we, our generation, the generations younger than this, didn't go through with what our dad's generation did. You know, with like the draft and not knowing if you're going to fight and fighting, if you're essentially conscripted into the war. And Ali just said, I got no quarrel. This is exactly right. I have no quarrel with the Viet Cong.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like
I just have so much respect to that. Anybody that's willing to, he gave up everything for his beliefs. And I'm like, you know what? I respect that.
It's a fucking man. That's a fucking man who can sit there and say, I believe in this and I will not sell out my beliefs for whatever. Like it's just, it's a hero. Like I could talk about Muhammad Ali forever.
Me too. Oh. And I just wish that our guy Robert Silva was alive today to talk about him. So. You got me thinking about Uncle Robert Silva, Fight Game Media, man. He was the best.
Good dude, man.
Yeah, he was a good dude. But I don't want to end it on a sour note, man. I could talk old school boxing like all night. Let's get to some let's get to the chat, and then we'll call it a night. Say how you doing, JD? This is Anthony. Who's Anthony, JD?
Oh, one of my students.
Oh,
you shouldn't be watching the show, by the way.
So I'm immediately gonna stop cussing.
Shit.
Dang it. So JD's got heat now. JD's in trouble.
This is new.
God's drunkest driver, Bobby Bugatti. He says, yo, what's up? Welcome. We got some people watching on X. Let's see.
I bet we do.
The Snuka tombstone was rough.
He dropped
Snuka. I think the scariest one I ever saw was when he tombstoned Kane. So that was at WrestleMania 14.
Jimmy Snuka can handle a bad pile driver because, you know, karma.
Yeah. So Let's see. Brad says, I'm not going to say the word now because we got kids watching, but F the Hulk Hogan, Iron Sheik, and George Foreman probably. George Foreman was on WCW. Like, they were friends.
George Foreman, I believe Foreman is in the corner. I want to say Foreman's in the corner when he beats Flair. Bash the Beach 94.
Yeah, Bash the Beach 94. Like, they were like good friends. I don't think there was any animosity. And George Foreman, look, was a shameless self-promoter himself.
Right? Oh, they're cut from the same cloth, man.
So he's like, he's also a carny. As much as I love the fact, and I love the new movie that came out where he, you know, like, goes away because of his faith. I got so much respect for that. And then comes back, he's doing all the good. And then he learns, like, the business side of boxing, right? Mm-hmm. And then he becomes, like, still a good man, but also understands, like, you got to be kind of a carny, right? And so he was able to carny his way into some business deals. Forgot to mention, Foreman's fight, I think in 1989, somebody can fact check me, with Evander Holyfield.
Oh,
amazing. One of the greatest fights that you'll ever watch. Like he's just up there. And if you thought that he had no stamina against Ali, like, he was kind of like, it seemed like he was a little bit gassed out in that fight with Evander, because Evander's like lighter, leaner, faster, younger, but he stood toe to toe with him the entire fight. He got his ass kicked, but it was like some of the bravest shit I've ever seen from a boxer. Like, a man just did not have any quit in him whatsoever in that fight.
Foreman had these big ass arms, right? Like, these giant shoulders and big hands. I mean, that's a lot. Like, that's why he was a power hitter, because he wanted to get those things boom, boom, boom to get people down. Like, Evander Holyfield won his Olympic title at the light heavyweight division. Like, Evander came up. Evander grew into it. Foreman was a big some bitch from get. Like, and it's hard to, if you're a big, massive dude, it's hard to carry those muscles deep into periods. Like, that's why guys like that he'd knock you out, because that's just what God gave him. Right. Big ass arms, big dude. Evander, different kind of fighter. God damn, I love that era of heavyweight boxing.
For sure. Dennis Owen says, the amount of people that act like AEW should one-sided play the good guy is wild. Even other shows in the VOW feed act like TK should just capitulate without getting anything in return. I get where you're coming from. I understand your argument. I understand Dave Meltzer's argument. I also understand the other side of the argument. I'm a lifelong fan of Lex Luger. Okay. I see that man in that wheelchair. If he came to me, like, rolling up to me in a wheelchair, like, hey man, can we use Sting for the night? If it's me, I'm like, I gotta say yes. Right. Like, even though it's like, you're kind of helping WWE, but you're not really helping WWE. They're not making, I know they sell tickets to this thing, but nobody's buying the ticket to see Sting induct him. They're buying the ticket because it's just the Hall of Fame event.
And here's the thing. It's a scorpion and the frog thing for sure. Like, you know, you're going to get bit by the scorpion over and over again, but they're going to bite you whether you give them Sting or not.
Yeah.
Like, nothing changes. I don't know what WWE can give them that's worth anything, quite frankly.
Right.
Like, okay, they give them some Sting footage for a documentary. Where are they going to show it? You know what I'm saying? Like, people don't buy DVDs anymore. You know, it's like, are they going to run it on Max? Okay.
I mean, YouTube.
But there's no money. There's no money there. So, I mean, like, I don't foresee what they would be willing to give. Like I said, I would try to make a play because we want Cody to introduce the world title match at the next pay-per-view and smile and see what they say.
Yeah.
You know,
that would be fun. That would be fun. And last comment before we call it a night, the fact that Hogan's last miss from Nonzo, tactical playmaker, the fact that Hogan's last match happened in TNA kills that POS so much. Actually does give me so much joy.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. Cause he wanted, like, he was just broke at the time and wanted nothing to do with TNA, but like, that was the only way he could make money was to go to TNA. And he thought the TNA was like so beneath him. So did Eric Bischoff, but they're like, oh brother, there's money and we got to go. And like, Hogan's going through the divorce and, you know, got himself jammed up with that Bubba the Love Sponge stuff. And like, he's like,
boy, is that guy really bad at picking friends?
Yeah. You know what? Like, he did good with, you know, like, the only guy that's ever really truly been loyal to him is probably Jimmy Hart.
Cause Jimmy Hart's like, a wonderful human being.
Yeah. Cause like, Brutus Beefcake, like, tried to swindle him out of some money and like a bunch of other, and then of course Bubba, who was like I listened to his show back in the day when he was on Sirius. I could have told Hogan this guy's a scumbag. Like, he's like shady as hell.
The way I don't want to do this whole thing, but like, to I almost used a bad terminology for this.
I'm not gonna do it.
To hose over your supposed friend the way he did is just like messed up on so many levels. Yeah. Like, it just, look it up if you don't know what I'm talking about. Like, Hogan's, would someone call that karma too?
Yeah. So, you know, Hogan was like, our Undertaker was saying in the clip, I just watched the clip the other day because I just get random clips on my YouTube feed. And so, like, it was just a clip of Undertaker talking about Hogan coming out in LA on the Raw debut on Netflix to like a series of boos. And he's like, well, he goes, and Undertaker had also come out that night and he got wildly cheered. They voted for the same guy. They campaigned for the same guy, but they all hate Hogan. But Hogan was trying to blame the Republican stuff. But Undertaker was right there with him, right? He's like, no, this is karma because you're like, oh, you're a bad guy.
So, they work for TKO. That is, you are, there's not a more Republican company in the world. You know, it's these fans are all about it. Like, you are just an asshole.
Yeah. That's so, like, if like that crowd hates you, then like you must be a bad guy. And it's like a lifelong of scumbaggery from
home. It's just, it's poetic justice, really. The fact that everybody else kind of figured out what Dave was trying to tell everybody 30 years ago. Yeah. Right. This is why I get mad. People shit on Dave Meltzer. It's like, no, listen to Dave. Like, he's right about 99% of things.
Okay. I said, we'll do one more since we actually got one from.
I guess Brian Knobs is a good dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Brian Knobs. Yeah. I mean, I, he's going through some stuff. I think he might have to have his like leg amputated or something like that. So, So they actually did a DDP, Goldberg, Sting, Marcus Bagwell, and a bunch of other WCW alums did like a fundraiser for him, like online. So like they did an online auction. So they raised up a bunch of money. So
Dallas Page is a great human being.
You know what? Like, I know we got the John Huber and Shad Gaspard Award in the Observer. I think it should just be the Diamond Dallas Page Award. Like, I know people give him heat because he videos it, but here's why he videos it.
Is he putting himself over?
Yes, but he's also giving hope to other people.
Yeah.
Look at how far these people were down and look at them now. JD, I challenge you as a man to watch the Butterbean one and try not to cry. Another legendary boxer, the king of the four rounders from Tuesday Night Fights back in the day. Like, the guy can't, like, he's in a wheelchair. He's like 500 pounds. The guy can't walk. He is in a, like, training for a boxing match right now. It's like he is in shape right now.
Like, Dallas Page is just a wonderful human being. Like, he just tries. Yes, he does it. Is he put himself over? Yes, but he's using his like fame to help people.
Yes.
Like, and that's a good thing. If you can use that kind of stuff to bring happiness to people, that makes you a good dude. A DDP is working with Abdullah the Butcher now. That's awesome. I didn't know that. Right.
Yeah, that's great. I saw the video of that. So
I didn't know that. And Abby's always been a large mammal. So I mean, God, Abdul the Butcher, he gotta be in his 80s by now, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Legend. Definitely. Like, oh man.
Well, we could talk all night.
Yeah, we should pull this up.
Yeah, because it's like super late for you, and I got to go downstairs and cook dinner. So, but guys, that's going to do it for us this week on the Mike and JD Show. Head to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. Make sure you hit the like button, comment, and subscribe. Please do. And then, and follow us on Twitter, do all that stuff. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-made, no rain, from the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-made, no rain.
The listeners we've had.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.